Welcome to the Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on. Hey, this is Ethan from the future. Remember last episode I had to interrupt it because it got kind of long? Well, here's part two, continued, and I'll come back later for some interesting feedback we managed to get. So I'll let you guys jump right on into it. This is part two of three, because after this episode we determined that we had more to talk about. So keep listening, because next week we'll have part three of the horror podcast. So I'm going to get off the line before Jeremy tries to wreck the time machine again.
Today, we're going to learn to make plutonium from common household items.
I'm sorry, sir. We're about to close for lunch.
Lunch be damned. I'm looking for an important book whose very teachings will rend the veils between the worlds and bring forth great Cthulhu himself.
We have many books, sir. Also charms, sigils, filters, phylacteries and educational films, giant pandas...
A special and particular book. I seek the Unaussprechlichen Kulten of Wilhelm von Junz.
Goblin Press or Folio Edition?
Goblin Press.
Sorry, we don't have that, sir.
Folio edition, then.
I'm sorry, we don't have that either, sir.
Very well. How about the Cathat Aquadingen?
Just sold the last one today, sir.
Damn. What about De Vermis Mistress?
It's on back order, sir.
The Altdown Shards?
I'm sorry.
Revelations of Glarky?
9 or 12 volume edition.
Both? Any?
No, I'm afraid not, sir.
The Necronomicon?
It's awaiting reprint in paperback.
Well, what do you have, then?
Well, if you just care to walk through here into this dimly lit back room, sir, I'm sure you'll find something of interest.
Righty-ho. My lord, that's disgusting. No, stay away from me. Get off! No!
Oh well, I did warn him it was lunchtime.
Lovecraftiana, the little shop of cosmic horrors from Yogg-Sothoth. www.lovecraftiana.com.
What a filthy job.
Could be worse.
How?
Could be raining.
But, no, something that we were talking about earlier is sometimes people react to the horror different ways, too.
Yeah.
And I know personally one of the ways I react is if I am getting nervous, I crack jokes.
Yeah.
So there is that thing that you have to sometimes watch, too. While a person may not be meaning to ruin
the atmosphere,
it's just how they handle it. Because depending on the situation, and also some characters, not even just players, some characters may act that way, too. That's just something I want to throw out.
My games never go without having jokes cracked.
I mean,
just the way I do things.
And I understand sometimes, and I've actually had this happen before, where it did kind of ruin the atmosphere, but I had to throw in a joke here. I remember a few campaigns way back when we were gaming with a little Nazi gnome, and the atmosphere was great, but his descriptions were horrifying, and without cracking jokes, I think I would have either one gotten sick or hit him over the head with a chair, which goes into other things. But
yeah. No, the thing is you want to try to avoid the whole aspect of people who crack jokes. But the fact of the matter is more than likely, when I said, when the situations get entirely too tense, mm-hmm. you have to lighten the mood in some way, shape, or form.
Right. Tension.
And the best way to do that is crack a joke. Like, take something that you're doing in the game that's so absolutely horrifying and mock it.
Yeah, have that evil lich thing just start randomly, cackling, but then just throws something in and just makes everybody laugh.
He's like cackling, he's like a...
Yeah, he acts like a bug.
And he coughs and, you know, right, a well, mouse rolls out of his mouth and goes to the floor and shakes its head and runs off.
That's using horror, that's using sort of the comedy to break the mood in game. I think any good horror movie is going to have something in there to lighten the mood, and if you follow that up with something scary again, it even makes it that much more terrifying. If you watch any movie, any horror movie, there's going to be moments of comedy in it, and it humanizes the story. It makes it a bit more, okay, any good movie, Hitchcock did it all the time, where he let you relax, and then he hit you with something else. And that just, again, it elicits that terror again.
Yeah.
I remember a haunted castle that some of my players went to at one point, and it was run by a brother of one of the characters who had fallen into evil, was actually worshipping one of my dark goddesses.
Sounds familiar.
And the players were invited to stay the night at his castle because it was his sister. And unfortunately, he hadn't cleared the castle out. And so all through the night was the normal bumps and noises and chains being dragged down. And it was very simple. I didn't go into any major detail.
I remember this.
But I was
this.
Able to scare enough people that it worked out well. And they left that castle, and they were like, we're never coming back.
They never got attacked by anything. I was there for the first part of that, and then I had to go to work.
Never got attacked by anything.
There's a great movie that I'd recommend watching at some point to help get that atmospheric idea of doing a horror story without introduction of monsters or an actual being like that is the original Haunting, black and white version, not the crappy remake.
It's the Haunting of the House. In the
Just the Haunting. It's just the Haunting. I believe it was done by Peter Weir. I can't remember. I'll put it in the show notes. But
the name of the book is The Haunting.
The Haunting of Hill House.
Well, there's two different movies. There's an old one called The Haunting of Hill House, and there's an actual movie just called The Haunting. It's a black and white movie about these people staying in a house, and the whole movie, the effects as far as the ghosts were lens effects, camera effects, and things like that. There were no monsters. It was all just this basically elicit of terror.
The Hill House was the same way, the original one. Mm-hmm. It was very good.
Well, you didn't have the psycho killer coming after you. It was all like the door started to bend in on itself or bleed and things like that. It's like entirely.
That's The Haunting of Hill House.
Okay, there's an original movie. It's called just The Haunting. And the whole movie is done with like fish. There's like the fisheye lenses and wide angle lenses and various weird angles to elicit great amount of fear from you, and they do it all without showing any monsters.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
Excellent.
I like that movie. I'd like to get my hands on that.
We should talk about some classic monsters, though.
Frankenstein?
Yeah, you know, all the classic monsters.
Dracula, Frankenstein.
There's a lot of
man.
Fun.
With the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes, the mummy, the vampire, the werewolf, the lizard guy.
The creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, the lizard guy.
So if you're trying to do a horror thing,
amphibian guy.
By the way, I think this is going to end
up froggy kind of.
If you're trying to elicit like the old Universal horror movie style genre, like with the old Bela Lugosi Dracula, Boris Karloff Frankenstein, Boris Karloff Mummy, the creature from the Black Lagoon, that's another way to go about it. That's not really trying to elicit sort of the deep
fear per se.
But it does bring out a good atmospheric quality to it.
That jump factor.
Also explain the atmosphere in the sense of it's so overshadowed and cloudy, it's almost black and white. You just have this feeling that the color's all muted.
I mean, goes into Hammer horror style, the old Roger Corman horror style and the old Universal style.
Back before they decided that gore was better than horror.
Right. Exactly. Even though at the time it might have been scary nowadays, if you watch Dracula, it's just a great movie.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a scary movie.
And one thing that this goes into both the classical, goes into the classical as well as the other one, one thing that I like to do once in a while is throw in cutscenes for the players.
Right.
So that they know that, you know, we cut to this person running, and something is following them, and suddenly that something catches them, and the person is no, you know, and whatever. You go on and describe, but it's kind of neat to have those cutscenes in. And if you want to be the classic monster, well, you describe the vampire biting down on the,
right.
the lady's neck. But if you don't want to have the classic, you don't want to know what it is.
Right.
You know, it depends on how you want to take it.
But, so, I mean, it also goes like if you're using, like in D&D, is you have flesh golems are pretty much mm-hmm. Frankenstein. Use that in any other setting, that it's a difficult thing to try.
Do you actually have stats for Frankenstein in there?
No. There's this neat little...
I have stats for Frankenstein in Deadlands.
Yes, cool.
There's Deadlands stats for Frankenstein. There's Deadlands stats for Dracula.
For Victor Frankenstein.
Let me bring that up real quick. Deadlands is a Western game. That's a horror game, actually, and I didn't think about that.
But that's when you need to modify your monsters, too. You can modify. And, like,
That's especially important in a fantasy game.
Yeah.
If you don't just take it straight out of the monster manual or whatever, take it and make it different. You know, add acidic blood or add things that are going to make it different.
People
don't expect it.
I like vampires.
Right.
I liked some of the stuff that Vampire Masquerade had for their vampires, mm-hmm. but I don't like a lot of the system. So what I've done occasionally is taken some of the powers from the Masquerade and put those into the D&D setting. And
it makes for more customization.
So like this vampire that's, it's a vampire, we can do this to it.
You should do that with werewolf too, actually.
Yeah, I mean, just throw it. It's not
like
that hard
werewolf.
To modify it. You know, give the vampire blood points.
Right.
And say, as he takes hit points, those don't necessarily go to his hit points, they go into a blood pool. And suddenly he can spend a point to cast haste on himself,
mm-hmm.
or gain extra attacks, or you know whatever. And
right.
it's just kind of neat.
Well, even if the vampire was
even looking at
the first place,
even looking at real quick on mixing game systems, is the D10 system is easily changed to a D20 by just multiplying it by two.
Mm-hmm. But you can add a lot of horror to that. So classical monsters, I love classical monsters: werewolves, mummies, you know, the creature from the Black Lagoon, the man.
Abbott and Costello.
Yeah. Let's see, anybody have any other ones? Any other classical monsters to leave me out?
Monster Squad.
Monster Squad.
Remember that movie?
I have never seen it. Monster
Squad.
If we have forgotten anything, please, feel free to email us.
There's any number
but
of them, is the thing. I mean, when we think of classic monsters, you're going to think of Frankenstein, the Mummy, the Wolfman.
They could also even go into, well, let's change gears a little bit. And think of aberrations. Those things, and I'm not just talking about the D&D version of aberration. I'm talking about
those are the
as an overall.
Those are the Cthulhoid monsters.
Because they're so alien.
Right.
Basically, if
the blob.
A good example is if you took an insect.
So D&D, are you going to think of a gelatinous cube as scary? No.
Not that.
But
much.
The movie The Blob
makes
a gelatinous cube scary because that's pretty much what it is. It's not a cube per
se,
but
it's kind of the triffids.
Which one?
Night of the
Triffids? Yes!
No.
I've seen Night of the Lepus.
So have I.
Yeah, that's bad. Night of the Triffids is not.
Night of the Triffids, like, there's this light, and it blinds pretty much everybody who didn't have their eyes covered at the time. So, like, maybe there were, like, two people who can still see. And then these giant moving plant aliens come and, like, start eating people.
Eating people. And the only way to defend yourself against them is to spray at them with salt water.
Yeah, I don't remember that. I was really young when I saw it.
That's an old movie. But yeah, it's based on a book, and the book is incredibly well done. But yeah, I've seen that. It's really well done.
Yeah.
But the only way they can protect themselves from them is actually by spraying at them with salt water. Yeah. It's funny, the way they figure it out, a fire breaks out in a lighthouse, and the plant monsters are coming after them, the aliens are coming after them. And the only sort of water system that this lighthouse has is it pulls water through a pump up from the ocean to put out the fire. Starts spraying, you know, the salt water on the plant things, and they start freaking out and dying.
Most of the planet is blind. So.
Yeah, they're just kind of being eaten rather haphazardly. Another one that would be an aberration would be War of the Worlds.
Yeah, War of the Worlds. Robin brought up Tremors as aberration. Now that is horror and comedy, but
Tremors are Chthonians. Face it.
Yeah.
Well, and there is something great about the alien mind, you know, the insects, the aliens, where they don't have the same
ethics or morals.
Well, that, or the same even thought pattern as any humanoid, or even a dragon-type creature, anything like that. They're completely alien, so they don't have, like, mind flayers or, you know, giant intelligent insects or aliens.
As far as D20 is concerned, there's a great template that you could use out of the D20 future book, the extraterrestrial template. Which allows you to add random things to just an existing archetype of, you know, like an orc with acidic blood or two laser beams out of his eyes.
And kind of alien bug civilization in Starship Troopers, not the movie. That could be scary. I mean, they didn't portray it that way. But that was more of
like the blues
militaristic.
Robert
Heinlein.
That is pretty horrifying.
It could be scary.
I mean, okay, if you take a swarm of ants, well, that's creepy. But if they're a whole, if they're human size or bigger, they don't think like us. That's scary.
As long as the Heinlein thing is they pretty much did a great. The best Heinlein-esque Starship Troopers was Aliens. Mm-hmm. With the Colonial Marines, and that elicited some.
And that alien is scary.
Oh yeah, and because it's alien.
It doesn't think like us at all.
Exactly.
Even though they try in the movie to say this is why this alien is doing this,
right?
And they try to put our human ideas and thoughts on it. You can't be sure. You're not actually sure why it's doing that.
They didn't really terribly try to explain.
No, not on the first one.
The first movie, they just ran wanted away. To kill people.
Right, right.
But I know it's a series that was on, though.
There was a scene where she goes and finds a hive where people are being transformed into eggs.
Same with the Predator. I mean, officially it's hunting us, but why? I mean,
right.
Why is alien minds?
A good one for that is, has anybody ever seen The Extra?
The Extra? No.
Extra. It's a 1980s horror sci-fi movie with an alien that basically from an alternate dimension, and the whole reasoning behind the whole creature is so utterly alien compared to what we would think. I mean, it kills people, but it doesn't kill people for the purpose of, oh, I need to kill you for your blood or anything like that, or, oh, I just want to kill you for the sheer pleasure of it. It kills people for the process of keeping itself alive in this dimension. It uses their essence to make sure that it doesn't die while it's in this dimension. It's trying to find a way back to its own dimension because it was brought here out of its own free will. Stuff like that. There's some really cool stuff out there.
We keep sort of getting off of it on aberrations, but there are numerous examples. If you're running an aberration, you're running an alien type of entity, I think what's important is you need to try to think logically about why the creature is doing what it's doing. Don't have it just randomly killing people all the time. This goes with any monster, really, is give it a purpose. Give it something that it's supposed to be doing. Even Frankenstein had a goal. You know, Dracula had a goal. The creature from the Black Lagoon had a goal. Any of those.
So, and again, it depends on the horror game you're trying to run, though.
Right.
There is the mindless monster.
There is.
The mindless monster who has no goal.
It's right, like the blob. Sure. But if you're, you're right.
If it's more sophisticated in the sense of, you know.
You know they did a sequel to the Blob?
Yes.
Yeah.
They did a remake also.
Well, they made a sequel to the remake. Mm-hmm. And I did not know that. I've never seen it.
Classical monsters, aberrations, aliens. But then, you know, there's the normal just human creepiness. The serial killer, the neighbor that.
Urban legends.
Jersey Devil. The Jersey Devil scares the crap out of my brother. Mothman was creepy, too. What's that?
Chupacabra.
Chupacabra. Dark Seas. Dog Soldiers.
Dog Soldiers is a great example of mixing a horror with a modern twist. I think one thing a lot of horror movies sort of put into it is isolation.
Mm-hmm. Being trapped. Yeah.
Trapping you, cutting you off from civilization.
Ravenloft does that very well. Because you are trapped from the other world, basically.
Right.
Call of Cthulhu does it really well, too.
Yeah, it does.
By the end setting, because you may start off in a civilized place, but when you actually have to go deal with the problem, you're usually out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. With no one around.
Looking at it in a modern setting is like a world of cell phones and whatnot. You do have that cell phone, but use that against them.
Dead spots.
No, not even dead spots. It's like, when the alien, the Cthulhu monster calls you on your cell phone.
Hello, I'm going to eat you.
Great examples, like The Ring, anything like that, is they use technology as their as
the Grudge.
Even The Grudge, to an extent, even though it's a terrible movie.
This is Dracula calling, I'm eating your sister.
But, you know, it's no fun. It's like, oh, hey, we're trapped in a haunted house. I'm going to whip out my cell phone and call the Marines. I mean,
pick up the phone, like, help, I need help.
Right. Or like you saw a zombie movie where, you know, they call in the government, they nuke them.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we need help. Okay. Took care of the problem.
That's one thing we haven't discussed, though, is zombies.
Zombies.
Survival horror.
Yes. Dawn of the Dead, the new one.
Dawn of the Dead. They're doing another remake. Day of the Dead.
Do you want your zombies to be normal zombies, or the zombies that you can hack and 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 finally somebody figures out, oh, if I put a bullet in his head, he's gonna die.
Yeah, exactly. Again, though, that brings in Dawn of the Dead brings in, and even Night of the Living Dead is isolation. You're surrounded, you can't get out, and you have to figure out a way to get out or to survive.
And it depends also on the setting, because, you know, in a fantasy setting, a couple of zombies, while scary, aren't that horrifying. An army of undead zombies heading your direction is
absolutely
horrifying.
Terrifying.
In a modern setting, though, 12 zombies attacking you, that's pretty scary. That's
also another opportunity.
I know we're jumping around, but that's okay.
Yeah.
For atmosphere, I always wanted to take a group out to, like, some haunted sites. Not to game at, no.
Well, actually,
but to take them to the sites to look at beforehand.
My sister came down and visited a couple weeks back. We went on a ghost tour of Topeka, because she was out visiting her friend Crystal, and went on a ghost tour. It was a lot of fun. We talked to the people who actually run it, and they do private tours, like $10 a person.
It would be neat to take
you. I'm sure they do that in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And I was talking with Nathan about it. Says you two have actually done some investigations into various horror things.
Really,
I'd love to do one at some point.
Yeah.
But yeah, if depending on the area you live in, that Jeremy brought up a good point. Depending on the area you live in, you could go to a supposedly haunted location initially. I'm not saying run your game there by any means, but go there to help set the atmosphere, and then the next day or later on that evening, run your game. People are going to be more into that horror mindset to be scared and actually be in that mood to play in a scary game.
The best place I've ever run a Call of Cthulhu game was in the house that I used to live in a place called Nevada, Missouri. The house, for all intents and purposes, was haunted. And weird crap happened while we were gaming.
I would be one of the individuals who said I would not be comfortable gaming in a so-called haunted place. I'd visit one beforehand.
I never told you about the experience I had at my mom's house.
But I would not game there for certain reasons.
I think one of the reasons why I love playing horror games is some of the stuff that's happened, like the weird stuff. Sorry. Like being getting home at, like, I used to work for Sony. As I think several of you know, out of one of the little places, satellite places in Fort Scott, and I'd get home at about 3 o'clock in the morning because I worked a dead shift, and coming home and everyone else was asleep, and you come into the bedroom and we had a kitten, and he was scratching at the door, howling, which is first unusual because he usually only squeaked. He's one of those cats that didn't really meow. Open the door, comes shooting in, and he just hackles, and all his hair is like standing straight up on end, and his tail's puffed up like this big. And looking out in the hallway, there's no one there, and just getting that feeling that something's wrong, and shutting the door, and I had the only door in the house that had a lock on it left, in one of the old blocks from the house that was built in 1897, locking the door and watching the door rattle on its hinge for 45 seconds, and you're the only person up.
Mm-hmm.
I freaked out so bad I was screaming, and my stepdad couldn't get the door open. He's banging on the door, and I'm not doing anything with it. They ended up having to break the door open to get the door open. That was the most horrifying thing I've ever had happen in my entire life. And to this day, I still have no idea what the hell happened.
It was me.
Damn you, Ethan.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that house was freaking haunted.
That's why Jeremy smashed the time machine.
Yeah. You know, we should also talk about Fae, or Fairy Folk.
Yes, Fae is a little bastard.
If you look at folklore,
they're
are some of the scariest creatures in existence.
They're nasty.
Actually, folklore is a great place to look for inspiration for horror.
It's only been in later years where the fairy folk have been, oh, it's some neat little leprechauns and fairy folk, oh, they're so sweet. When it used to be, holy crap, don't go into the woods, they will eat you.
Right.
Yeah.
Well you know, we all think leprechauns, and, you know, leprechauns like, oh, it's me Lucky Charms. When in actuality, if I remember the folklore right, the leprechauns were not a nice thing.
No, they were.
They were cannibals.
You would go to.
More like the movie Leprechaun.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Or the fairy folk would decide, you know what? I like that person, so I'm going to kidnap them. And then forget to tell them that when they leave the fairy realm, they're going to rapidly age and disintegrate in front of, you know, their family. Yeah. We need a new baby. Let's kidnap yours.
Right.
And we'll leave, like, a couple coins there.
You're telling me about a book you spotted once with pictures of gnomes.
Oh, God, the gnome book.
Yeah, that book is messed up. The artwork book.
Oh,
the
my God.
Book.
No, these are photos of gnomes.
People have taken over the years. Obviously, it's a setup, but they're creepy beyond all belief. If you read that book, and then you go driving at night,
you see gnomes.
You will scare the crap out of yourself.
I know. You have
I don't
that book.
Remember
Your
the name of the
book.
Book. My mom has that book. If anybody knows the name of that book, you know, feel free to email
us.
Yeah,
that book is disturbing. They also have one on giants. I don't know if you knew that, but they also have one on giants, which is just as disturbing, although they don't have photographs of people through the years.
Yeah, but there's something creepy. I remember this. It wasn't Saturday Night Live. There was a program before Saturday Night Live came out. I was very young when it happened, but basically, it was little people. And this guy went into a psychiatrist and said, right before I fall asleep and close my eyes, I always see these little people. And of course, the therapist is like, oh, well, I'm going into all the, you know, these different reasons why. Except then the little people showed up and took him away. And it was supposed to be funny. But as a little kid watching this,
they're scared the crap out of
little people, just hundreds of them, grabbing this guy and carrying him off to this unknown, horrible fate. And I remember that, thinking back, going, oh my God, they're going to come and get me.
You know,
I'm going to have to smash them.
This also brings up is the not the classic idea of a monster, you know? No. It's like, when are you going to think these little 6-inch-tall people as monsters? Well, it
like
can happen.
I had an unscrupulous friend who, in high school, worked for a daycare in the summer, and they would give the kids nutritious snacks over break. And one day they had those. Instead, they had like these elven loaves. I don't know if you remember those. They were just like little. They looked like little bread loaves, and they came in like banana nut and blueberry. One of the children did not want to eat them. And so she told this kid that if he didn't eat it, the elves would be mad and would come at night and poke him in the eye.
Oh, my God!
She didn't say that it would hurt. She said that it would tickle, and he would laugh, and his parents would come in, and he would tell them that it was the elves, but his parents wouldn't believe him. So he had to eat his elven loaf, but he wouldn't. And he came back the next day and told her that she was right, that the elf had poked him in the eye all night. Like, the stuff they used to scare kids.
Oh, yeah.
That stuff is really freaky.
The classic fairy tales, those are not...
Not very nice fairy tales.
they've been horribly dumbed down.
The elf would come
lately.
And poke you in the eye and, like, poke your eyes out.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Red Riding Hood and things like that. Like we get the dumbed down version of those, but the real ones are just gruesome. I mean, the Grimm's fairy tales.
They were grim.
They were not... Yeah. Yeah, not for kids.
When we were little, we had a book of them, and my mom didn't realize that it was more of a literary book than a book for children.
Right.
Like the story of Rapunzel?
Oh, the one that I like is The Witch, with the witch in the Hansel and Gretel.
Yeah.
That one's really twisted from, like, the original, where people are being eaten and cooked, and it's just, ugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she kills,
she read them
too.
To us, and we didn't realize that they were the original fairy tales until the stepsisters in Cinderella started cutting off parts of their feet. And then at the end, the birds in this tree poked out the stepsister's eyes. My mom was reading the news during the faith, and we got really quiet.
That was the one where the fairy godmother came out of the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's Bert. Her father brings her a branch from a tree that she plants. And she goes out to this tree, and there are two birds in it that watch over her after her mother dies. And she, like, shakes the tree, and, like, dresses the ball to fall down on her.
That's cool.
But at the end, the birds poke out the stepsister's eyes.
That's another good thing.
That's a good way to incorporate horror into a fantasy setting in a fairy tale.
Exactly, yeah. So look up, I'm sure you can find some online now. It's the original horror, the original fairy tales, you know.
Like the original Beauty and the Beast?
The original Beauty and the Beast that you're about to knock over.
I see it. Because they all got wrapped around.
Oh, funny place, stop.
Yeah, the original fairy tales were pretty scary. I mean, when you think of, like, what's the one? Sleeping Beauty?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Beauty and the Beast is another not very nice one. Everyone's like, everyone remembers the Disney thing. Like, oh, in the end, she says she loves him, and he comes back to life even though he was dying and turns back into a human. No, in the original story, she tells him she loves him, he turns back into a human, and he's still dead. And then she commits suicide.
And her father sold her.
Yeah, her father sold her to the beast rather than, you know, her saving her father from a fate worse than death. No, her father got captured, and he said he'd do anything for the beast, and he sold his daughter to the beast to save his own life. Her father was a dick.
Say, before we wrap up on this, what sources of inspiration should we provide here as far as that you can get your hands on today?
For contemporary horror with like sort of the extraterrestrial feel to it, if you're curious about doing like say Call of Cthulhu, pretty simple. Just go down and pick up anything by H.P. Lovecraft. Mm-hmm. August Derleth, Robert E. Howard did mm-hmm. several mythos stories.
Yeah.
Let's see who else does some good stuff. Check out
you can find it anywhere. Edgar Allan Poe. Stories are great, that gothic horror style.
The Ravenloft.
Yeah, we're actually talking about writing.
Inspiration.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Stories.
Hey, there's the
books.
Oh, Ravenloft novels. Yeah.
Pick up Ravenloft novels. A good series of horror novels. What's the name of that series now? Crap. They based the book series and the movie In the Mouth of Madness off of them. Mouth of Madness is an homage to H.P. Lovecraft's work, but the books, the names of the books and the series of books that the guy is writing in the movie are based off an actual literary series, and I can't remember the name of it.
I mean, you could look at Stephen King or Dean Koontz, anyone like that, although I've heard bad things about Dean Koontz.
Be very careful about Dean Koontz, because a lot of times his novels aren't necessarily frightening, as they are just weird. Good Dean Koontz books for horror, The Watchers. Don't pick up Phantoms to save your life.
Yeah, but Ben Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms, yeah.
Yeah, Ben Affleck was the bomb in Phantoms, yeah.
You can also look at...
Twilight Eyes is a good one.
If you look back on some of the more not mainstream religious like stories, things like that, there's sometimes horror stuff, or at least give you inspiration. Yeah. Some of the painting stories on like hell and stuff.
I've already told them, obviously, the fairy tales, folk tales. Yeah. You can find books on urban legends.
Urban legends.
Those creep you out.
Great.
Any creepy movies, you know.
Hundreds of things
that will help out.
Definitely check out In the Mouth of Madness. I know I just hit on that.
In the Mouth of Madness is a great scary movie. Watch anything Hitchcock did will give you a good idea. They don't use supernatural elements, but they do... will give you a good idea on suspense and building up tension.
Oh, yeah.
Your friend's stories, even. I mean, you know, a couple of them have talked about some things at one point.
Yeah.
You know, that you could use something off of that.
And go to any used bookstore, you can find books on ghost stories and things like that.
Oh, ghost stories, yeah.
Yeah, actually some interesting ones. There's an interesting book. I have a copy of it. I'll see if I can find it. Victorian ghost stories, because they're even more horrifying than the contemporary age ones, because the ghosts in those don't follow the same sorts of standards that we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they're just disturbing.
Check out Supernatural.
Yes.
It's a TV show. Is a good are we Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, Tales from the Dark Side.
Tales from the Crypt.
Let's take a bit of a break, and we'll come back with a three-parter.
If you think that by threatening me you can get me to be your slave, well, that's where you're right. But, and I'm only saying this because I care, there are a lot of decaffeinated brands on the market today that are just as tasty as the real thing.
All aboard! All aboard the Orient Express!
London.
Paris.
Sofia. Milan.
Venice.
Constantinople.
Yogg-Sothoth.com presents Horror on the Orient Express. A role-playing adventure from Chaosium, featuring award-winning role-players from an award-winning website.
May I introduce the MPK-45, one of our newest machine pistols. My company makes these, you know.
Fine. Will it stop one of these?
Ah!
Recorded in CD quality.
In binaural surround sound.
Horror on the Orient Express. A classic campaign for Call of Cthulhu. Coming in 2007 from Yogg-Sothoth.com.
Disclosure averted. Continue observation.
And now we're back with another three-part section, or another three-parter. Today in the three-parter, Nathan will be handling an NPC, I'll be handling a review, and Jeremy will be giving us a nice little rant.
We've got character.
Let's go ahead and kick it off with the NPC with Nathan.
Ah, the NPC, sticking true with the horror genre that we're talking about, as we have been talking about for the past 2 weeks. I will do an introduction. Samuel McCready was just your ordinary, average, everyday professor running Anthropology 101, or Anthro 101, at KU. He started his professorship on January 13th of
KU being the University of Kansas,
1927, until he mysteriously died at a hospital from a strange infection in 1934. Now, during that time, Samuel McIntyre, I said the wrong last name, didn't I?
Yep.
It's because he died.
Yeah, it's because he died.
He changed his name.
Samuel McIntyre was his actual name. Is what we're going to stick with. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Samuel McIntyre. So, during that time, Samuel McIntyre enlisted the assistance of several young and upcoming students and investigators to investigate strange Paleolithic sites around the state of Kansas. He apparently was fairly successful in his studies of exhuming remains and various artifacts, bringing them back for future study. One of the most interesting note was his infamous expeditions to southern Kansas to some ruins that had a strange name with the local Indians that called Natcot. At Natcot, unfortunately, out of a group of 37 individuals, three, including the professor, managed to come back from the investigation. The investigation was deemed a horrific failure. Horrific. He was almost stripped of his professordom until it was revealed that he brought back incredible relics and artifacts from the dig. No one has since then ever returned to the site. There were indications that the entire archaeological site collapsed in on itself, which is what caused the death of so many students and excavators. What was little known was just before he passed away, he was working on a new manuscript that was given to him by an associate of his that lived in Kansas City. Not much else is known about this manuscript, but it is said to still be in the materials that are in a retention area at the University of Kansas. Anybody willing to investigate might be able to find out more than they probably bargained for.
The review.
I will be giving you a nice review of the game Deadlands, published by Pinnacle Press, or Pinnacle Publishing, which is also now it's been bought up by Great White Games, I believe. I'm going to review the old second edition, or the revised edition, put out by Pinnacle.
It's by Shane Lacey Hensley, who's gone on and done many, many things. It's an Origins Award-winning book. It's by Shane Lacey Hensley and John R. Hoppler, Matt Forbeck, and Hal Mangold also did some design on it. But Pinnacle Entertainment put the game out. You can still get them at peginc.com. Put that in our notes. Game was published, I believe, first it was published in 1997, I think. I could be wrong there. Correct me if I am wrong. But what Deadlands is it's the Weird West role-playing game. It's set in an alternate history where you have, it's believed that the time of the actual game is about 1877 or 76, depending on the edition you pick up, where you have the Civil War is still going on. History is about as we remember it up until the Battle of Gettysburg, when a nasty man named Raven managed to start something called the Reckoning, and he got the Reckoners onto our plane of existence, and the dead started getting up and walking, and Ghost Rock was found, and all this crazy stuff kept happening. So of course that throws a monkey wrench in the whole Civil War thing, and so it's been going on for a while now. Deadlands can often be referred to really as Call of Cthulhu in the Old West. There is actually a Call of Cthulhu crossover book called Adios Amigo. But Deadlands is, I think it's a rich, rich setting. I love how it uses playing cards as a game mechanic, where you actually, to roll up your character, you draw playing cards to help to develop that. And if depending on the type of magic you use, because there are three types of magic in the game, you can be the huckster magic, which is the trickster, the charlatan magic. They use playing cards and play poker against evil spirits called Manito to use magic. Then there are shamans, like Indian shamans, who basically sacrifice things to spirits to get their power. And then there is the divine magic, or the holy retributive power of faith, which is like fire and brimstone, and you call down miracles to... Exactly. You call down your divine wrath onto non-believers. And you gain such powers through following your faith and following it very strictly. Deadlands takes the whole Western idea and sort of turns it on its ear, where it adds in a very rich history to go by, where the Civil War is still going on. You have the overall fear of going on in the Old West, of the unknown and things that just are happening, strange folk tales that are coming true and things like that. Whereas, like, everyone doesn't think that the dead walk around, but when you go out into the Old West and you're attacked by a salt rattler or a Mojave rattler as well, which are, if you've ever seen Tremors, that's pretty much it. Abominations and strange beings, cultists, black magic, all that. It uses not only the playing cards, but it also uses all types of dice. I highly recommend the game. There's any number of material out for it. There is a D20 version out, which is awful, and I would wholeheartedly say don't touch it with a 20-foot pole, because it kind of destroys the mechanic of the game by getting rid of the playing cards, if I understand right. There is a new edition of the game, just came out from Great White Games, which is Deadlands Reloaded. They alter it to use their Savage Worlds engine, and I'm not too happy with that. I'm not too fond of the new edition, but make up your own mind on that. I love the old edition. I think it's some great stuff. It's some rich material. You have a lot you can do with this. It's a great, great little system to run in, and there's a reason it won Origins Awards. There is a sister game to it, actually two sister games to it. Deadlands is the Weird West. There's a game called, Deadlands Hell on Earth, which is a post-apocalyptic game.
That might be fun.
Which is basically you take the Deadlands setting and set it in the future, and it's what if the Reckoners won and the apocalypse and Earth was turned into a Deadland. It's an interesting game system. It's actually something that was hinted at for about 2 years. They actually teased you with the concept of it in hints in the Deadlands books. And then there's also Deadlands Lost Colony, which is also set in the future, but it's a Earth's first colony off planet, off of the planet Earth, that's been cut off because of Hell on Earth. It's the Earth becomes a deadland, and all communication and all traffic is cut off. And it's what happens on that lost colony, and the fact that the Reckoners know it's there and are heading that way. Some interesting stuff. They didn't really develop that one too much. But it's all good stuff. Go to pegging.com. You can still pick up some of the books. They're all available in PDF form. You can get them off of DriveThruRPG or through RPG Now. Good stuff. I highly recommend it. That's about it. What do you guys think of Deadlands?
That version, the second edition, is fun. I like it. There's nothing quite like making a character by drawing cards. And there's nothing quite like drawing both Jokers while making your character. Because then the GM looks at you and just gets this evil look
and
on his face.
And cackles madly.
And you realize, as he explains to you what the Jokers are, mm-hmm. that your character is going to be in for one hell of a ride. But I would recommend second edition. The new edition, Reloaded, is, as Ethan said, based off the Savage Worlds system, mm-hmm. which I've played with, and I hate. Not to say anything was wrong with Great White Games. Their stuff is well written. I just don't like the system.
Right.
So if the third edition is based off of that system, I cannot recommend it at all because I don't have any good luck with the Savage World systems. And that might just be because I don't have very good GMs for that system.
Right.
But we don't run it here, so I can't tell you if it's just a GM thing or if it's a system thing. But I don't care for the system and its rules anyways. But second edition, pick it up if you can. Find it where you can. Get it.
Even the first edition is decent as well. The only difference really between the two is a year of game time, and the second edition came out with hardcover players' books and Marshall's books. So there were two books to buy instead of just one, but it also incorporated a bunch of material from other supplements into the new edition. It's a much better put together game. But you can find this stuff on eBay and Amazon in droves. They put out tons and tons and tons of material.
I've never played the Dice 20 version, and I've never played the new version. I like the second edition version. It's nice. I personally like to play the clueless, just gunslinger when I play Deadlands to stay away from the magic. It makes it a lot more fun to kind of be the character who just either one doesn't believe or refuses to believe that there is anything not quite right. It's a lot of fun. It's different. It's very different. There isn't a lot of curative measures, so you don't want to get hurt.
even with a
pastor or a priest in the party, that God sometimes only heals you so much. So you want to be very careful. It can be a deadly, deadly game. A gunfight, while fun,
is extremely
if you can avoid it, do, unless you're one really good gunslinger. I recommend it to anyone. Give it a try. If you do play in it,
one thing the system is really well stacked on is it actually gives you stats for a lot of historical figures,
yeah.
like Wild Bill Hickok and Calamity Jane, and it puts the Weird West twist on them all, too, and Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday and all that. It's really well done that way.
I recommend if you play in it, load up with a lot of bullets, the biggest gun you can get, and run away from anything weird.
Yeah, because as with Call of Cthulhu, sometimes bullets aren't the answer for it, you know.
Bullets sometimes just bounce off and just piss it off.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh.
But it's very adventurous. You still feel like an adventurer in it. I've never felt hopeless in it at all. And it is a lot of fun just to play in a Wild West setting. Trains, steam machines, you know.
Crazy walkers, mad scientist contraptions.
Mad scientists with giant spiders and such.
Right.
Robotic spiders, no less.
And you can even go so far as to play like a Zorro type character if you really
right.
wanted to, or a Native American, which is great. It just allows you to explore a lot of different aspects, which is nice. And I like actually how the dice how it works and how different it is, because it allows you to use multiple dice. The cards are really nice. Sometimes it works to your advantage where you might go 10 times in a single action, or you may go once.
Right, because combat is actually handled initiative-wise in cards, and basically the aces face cards being the highest, that sort of thing. It also ranks the suits and things like that. It's well put together. It's worth your time and money to look into it. I don't recommend D20 or the new edition. I would say check out the old stuff, because it's great.
Not to mention being able to rob bank in the Old West and get on a train or on your horse and just escape is a lot of fun. So, yeah, I recommend it.
Yes, most certainly.
The rant.
Since this is a horror, we're talking about horror, I want to rant on zombies. I hate those guys. The stinking zombies, they don't come in one or two. It's usually like 12, 13,000 zombies. Your neighbors turn into zombies. One neighbor eats another neighbor's brain. And suddenly it's a big zombie fest. And I hate that. You're walking down the street, enjoying the night. Everything's... Suddenly a zombie horde jumps out from behind a bush. Just starts eating your friends and dates and... You grab a shovel and you're like, well, I have a gun and a shovel. I'm going to beat my loved one to death with the shovel so she doesn't come back as a zombie. Save the bullet for myself. So you do so. The zombies keep coming and you're running and they're eating. And you hide in the movie theater. And you're like, oh, it's a nice, happy movie. It's about puppies. And, oh, it's so I'm eating some popcorn. And then the zombies come in and eat everybody. And you're like, holy crap. And so you get into a car and you drive away and you're like, I'm safe. But then the zombies learn. How can zombies learn? And soon they're driving cars after you and maybe they have Tommy guns. You're like, holy crap, you're dead! You don't have a brain! And then you realize it's a plague. And you're infected. So what do? Do you become a zombie? Do you join the zombie fest? Do you eat brains? Well, I did.
But then we found the cure.
We did.
Brain. Yes, I found the cure.
Bad. No.
Aww. Anyway, I hate those guys.
Stay. Put the harness back on him. Put him in his cage.
Zombies. They're bad.
Yeah, excellent. We'll be back after messages from our sponsors. Well, they're not really our sponsors, but we're going to give you messages about them anyway.
Unless they get eaten by zombies.
I am the supreme being. I'm not entirely dim.
Oh my god, it's a zombie! Come on, punch him in the face! Punch him in the face! Ow! Kick him in the balls, man! Just kick him in the balls!
I think I should piss him off more.
What are we gonna do?
Let's run away!
Out of the way, boys!
Wow, how did you know that would stop it?
Destroying the brain is the only way to kill a zombie. And that pretty much kills everything else, too.
Where did you learn that?
Oh, from the Zomcast.
What is that?
It is a podcast for all things zombie. It gives me all I need to know about zombie-related things in the news, plus reviews on movies, fiction, games, and sometimes other podcasts. Then there is the all-important zombie survival tips. Dustin of the Dead and Patrick O'Deadly give me the information I need to keep me alive after the Zompocalypse.
Wow, those two sound very informative, witty, and heroic.
Mm-hmm.
Hardly. They're just two dorks with good intentions. But I like them all right.
Oh, gross. What happened to your hand?
I must have cut my hand on the zombie's teeth when I punched him.
You should have used heavy gloves when you punched that zombie.
Why? What does that mean?
That means you're next.
Let Dustin of the Dead and Patrick O'Deadly help prepare you for the Zompocalypse. Listen to the Zomcast for all your zombie news and reviews. Go to zomcast.podbean.com for more information.
Great, my closet is the door to hell.
The necropolis, a porthole to the necropolis. It had to be on the south side of the apartment.
it's me again here with the feedback for this this episode. We actually got two voicemails from someone named Tangent over on Fistful of Comics. Hey, imagine that. Something from the Fistful of Comics guys. Hey, aren't we part of their network? Oh yeah, we are. Because you should all visit their website because it's really cool. Not to mention that we're on their website too. So if you visited our website, you're technically visiting their website. You know what? I'm just going to not deal with the whole time paradox thing. Here's the first message from Tangent.
Hi, this is Tangent from Fistful of Comics, you know, like your landlord. And I just wanted to say I listened to the first episode, and it was really good, but I have a couple problems with you, and you guys, your hit stats are way up, and your downloads are way up, and I think we're going to have to increase your rent by at least 25%. And I told you, stay out of Section 24. It's got a bad spot. You put a logo in there. It's corrupted. Don't do it again. So good job. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, thanks, landlord, for the piece of advice about Sector 24. We were sure to pry those boards off real quick after you gave us that information. I mean, we refused to go in there. We boarded it up and barricaded it. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Anyway, yeah, but then Tangent decided to send us another voicemail, and so here it is.
Hello, this is Tangent again from Fistful of Comics. Rookie Man is to tell you the ultimate nullifier is not a toy. You're not trained to use it. Keep your hands off of it. Just because you left it in this underground headquarters does not mean use it. That's it. Bye.
We'll keep that in mind, too. Definitely thanks for the good words from our wonderful landlords. I'll be sure to get those Quatloos out to you as soon as possible, as soon as we get finished printing them. Yeah, because we're an independent state and stuff now, remember? Anyway, that's about it for today's show. If you guys out there have any desire to actually talk to us, just do this. You can visit us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com or alternately at canadiancrusaders.fistfulofcomics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. You can drop us an email at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 2.5 license, and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com and is a Thousand Monkeys production.
Okay.
That will be this
big
awesome.
There,
the bunny won't hurt you.
I thought we could become our own nuclear power.
But then we'd have to register ourselves with the United States.
And they would put sanctions on us.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Individuals turning into lizards.
You and the reptilian agenda, dude. Come on.
We had a character that slowly was turning into a lizard.
Mm-hmm. A possessed, too.
And was possessed.
And was tainted.
And was tainted. All at the same time. And we're going to turn into a lizard thing and fly off.
I remember that. Sci-Fi Channel keeps the bad B-movies alive with things like Mantito.
Remember, we have one of those in our closet.
What the hell was that?
Stinks in here, but it has nothing to do with your conversation.
Are you sure?
You guys are no fun.
Time traveling bad.
Time traveling good, as long as you don't do anything when you get there.
As yep. soon as you time travel, you've done something.
Nothing. Yeah, when he died, that kind of sucked.
I tried to build a house at that site. Didn't it work out too well?
Yeah, it probably collapsed into itself, didn't it?
No, I caught it on fire. The voices told me to.
My voices tell me to be happy all the time.